Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for this hour of Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for tuning in this morning. Before we start off, I just want to acknowledge that this broadcast and all of our broadcasts here at CJSF are on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hulkamalam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. And with that, let's start this episode. Happy New Year, everyone. I hope everyone listening at this very moment, as well as everyone not listening at this very moment, had a restful and restorative holiday season. Wherever you are, I hope you're doing well. And I don't know about all of you, but I think certain weather patterns evoke certain genres of music. And in this case, with what we're experiencing right now, if you're outside, if you've been outside, I'm feeling like listening to some jazz. So to start off today's episode, we're going to be starting off with some local jazz. This is from Vancouver jazz musician James Danderfer off of his latest album, If Not Now. This track is titled I Like You.
Thank you.
And we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. That last track was I Like You by James Dandifer. And now we are back with this hour of talk content for all of you. Before I went on a little break in the last week of December, I was able to produce a piece that I played a couple weeks ago on Speak Up titled The Burnaby Heights BRT Expansion Debate. And this is specifically about the TransLink bus rapid transit options that are being weighed from the North Shore to Metrotown, which is seeing quite a lot of opposition as well as quite a lot of support. And I thought it was important to kind of speak to both sides of this issue in particular, or not issue, but occurrence. And this is my piece. I was able to speak with the head of the Merchants Association of Burnaby Heights, as well as Michelle Scar of Movement YVR, a local transit advocacy group here in Metro Vancouver. Without further ado, here is that piece. Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. TransLink, the transportation network for Metro Vancouver, had recently been seeking feedback on a public transit expansion that would create a bus rapid transit or BRT route from Metrotown in Burnaby to the North Shore. BRT is a form of bus-based rapid transit that provides designated bus lanes, transit signal priority at intersections, and weather-protected stations on designated BRT bus routes. The public feedback for this plan will help decide between two route options. Option 1, which would connect via Hastings Street and Willingdon Avenue in the Burnaby Heights area, and Option 2, which would connect via Boundary Road and Lougheed Highway, meaning that transit coverage in Burnaby Heights would remain mostly unchanged. BRT Option 1 has seen significant opposition from the Burnaby Heights Merchants Association and the area's small businesses, the primary reason being the loss of street parking that a designated bus lane along the area would cause. Movement YVR, a public transit advocacy group in Metro Vancouver, has the opposite view and believes that Option 1 would incentivize more people to visit the Burnaby Heights area and in turn support its various businesses. We reached out to both organizations for their perspectives and were able to speak with both Isabel Kolick, Executive Director of the Merchants Association, and Michelle Scar, Director of Operations and Strategy at Movement YVR. We asked both of them to explain their organization's stance on the planned BRT route from Metrotown and Burnaby to the North Shore. First, here is what Isabel Kolick of the Heights Merchants Association had to say.
If the merchants do well, the community does well, and vice versa. So we have consistently tried to reflect what the community wants in whatever positions we've taken. And I can sincerely tell you, Danny, I've talked to around 150 people, either through email. This is in the last, since August, let's say. I've talked to people on the phone. I've had dozens of people come in my office to talk to me face to face. I've had people write me emails, and then I've exchanged emails with them many times over. I've had people write us a lot of different perspectives. But out of the 150 people that have contacted us, and I'm sure there's probably more than this out there in the world, but only 6 of them favored having a BRT come through the Heights, remove all the parking, and leave the merchants kind of stranded and trying to compete with the Kensington Squares and the Brentwoods and the Costcos. And, you know, in this day and age when Amazon is king and convenience is king, the customer who's multifaceted, right? We don't have one kind of customer. We don't have only able-bodied or only transit-taking customers. We've got, you know, families who are hauling kids or who are bringing their pets to the vet, or people who are bringing a lot of groceries home. We've got seniors who don't live anywhere near a bus stop, who need to live their daily lives, right? So we're always like looking, okay, who are the diverse people that our community needs to serve? and the diverse merchants who also have their own needs, and how are they going to meet those needs if they have no curbside access to offer that convenience for the customer, right? In the meantime, Kensington can offer it. Brentwood can offer it. Brentwood has 10 times the parking we do. And Kensington Square has 10 times the parking that we have. Brentwood has 2,000 parking spots for 99 businesses, and we have 749 parking spots for 360 businesses. So it's tough, like, to compete with that.
Next is Michelle Scar of Movement YVR. During our conversation, she expanded on the support that Movement is providing for option one of the BRT, explaining that there's a possibility for the plan to still be enacted while saving the street parking along Burnaby Heights.
We actually think parking could be maintained, not all of it, but most of it, or part of it, along Hastings, if they go with a median BRT, which means that the two bus lanes would go in the middle of the road travel lanes. So, yeah, you're looking at me kind of quizzically, but it's so much easier to explain with a visual. So I'll do my best to describe it. But yeah, the two middle lanes in the road would be replaced by the bus only lanes. They would be served by little like stations that kind of float in the middle of the road. But they are like raised and like separate curbs. You'll see those in like Toronto, and we actually do have one in Surrey, a median stop.
Okay, I was gonna ask, yeah.
Yeah, at like 72nd, I think. So they do exist here. So anyways, bus lanes in the middle of the road, and then the stop would exist only at the stop locations. Then there would be a general purpose travel lane for cars, and then you would have, so if there's a stop, there probably wouldn't be extra space for the parking, but in the parts where the bus is just traveling and there's no station, there could be space for parking and for parklets or just an extended sidewalk. We actually have some mock-ups of that a volunteer of ours worked on. So we know it's possible. Hastings is a very wide street with 6 lanes currently. We can be a bit creative here and like have modes of transportation for everyone.
This is something that we also spoke about with Isabel Kolick, who believes that while this idea is good in theory, it wouldn't work for the Burnaby Heights neighborhood.
So when Translink came out with this proposal that you just described, the option one and option two, we have asked them, why does parking need to be removed to do this project? And they have told us on numerous occasions, not just for this project, for other things as well, Hastings Street is not wide enough to do that kind of infrastructure and keep parking. Some of the bus advocates, you know, and I respect their work, you know, we need bus advocates out there, but they've been kind of like attaching themselves to the idea that, well, we can keep the parking and we'll put the train in the middle or the bus rapid transit in the middle of the street. And I mean, that looks really nice on paper and it looks really great in the illustrations. But the reality is that Hastings Street isn't wide enough to do that. And the examples that they're giving, like St. Clair West, for example, in Toronto, St. Clair West is 40% wider than Hastings Street, and they were able to keep their parking. So in light of this picture that we can't keep our parking if we're going to have option one, we're like, okay, well, what other option can we have where we still have access to the BRT, you know, in or near our neighborhood, keeping in mind the BRT is bus rapid transit. It's not a local bus. It's like a SkyTrain. And when you take the SkyTrain or I take the SkyTrain, it's designed to move the largest number of people across a long distance as quickly as possible. And when we take the SkyTrain, we get off at the nearest station that we can, and then we jump on a local bus to get to our specific destination. And that's what we're looking at here. So we're like, okay, if this is like a SkyTrain, a rapid transit line, then let's have a station at Kootenay Loop where it's planned. We have 7 buses that run through our district, serving tens of thousands of riders a day. We have 50,000 boardings a day on Hastings Street. We have buses every 1.71 minutes. So during peak hours, during non-peak hours, it's around every 4 minutes, like on a Sunday morning, for example. So at most, you'd be waiting maybe 4 minutes, at least maybe 2 minutes, to catch a bus to the BRT, which is literally 2 or 3 minutes right away. And we thought, okay, this would be a compromise where we would still have access as the community to the BRT station, so we can use it too. We want to go to Park Royal or Metrotown, which is, you know, these two large urban shopping centers, connecting those two. It's not supposed to be like a local bus, but we have lots of local buses to connect to it. We thought it doesn't matter where it runs as long as it connects to those main centers and to other local buses. It doesn't matter that there's nothing on Boundary Road, because if you look at SkyTrain, when they built the Expo line, there was nothing along that route. There was no Joyce Center Towers. There was Metrotown, a much smaller version of what's there now. There were only single-family homes along the whole route. And the idea being just move people through the region and select where the stations are going to go, and then things will kind of blossom around those stations. So, and the reason the merchants promoted or supported option two was we thought it struck that balance where it's serving the needs of the region while protecting what we have in our community, which is really special.
Next, during our conversation with Michelle Scar, she referenced multiple studies that support Movement's position, claiming that the amount of business that cars provide to a business area is often overstated.
So another thing to take note of is that there's actually been multiple studies that show that business owners overestimate the number of drivers who show up to their businesses as customers. So, and there's actually been, there was a Mode Intercept survey done in the Heights not that long ago in 2022, which means that the surveyors were actually talking to people on the street and asking them in person, how did you get here today? So we have this data. We actually know how many people already, what method of transportation they use to go to the Heights. And it's mostly sustainable transportation. It's mostly walking, biking, and transit use. That was the majority of respondents. So I do think that the concern about drivers like not being able to access the Heights as easily is, I don't think it's a big concern, to be honest. There's also an abundance of parking in Burnaby Heights. So they have something like 15 to 25 little parking lots kind of all over the place. They also have a lot of side street parking off Hastings. There's a lot of parking options. And I think they should try something new and, you know, bring some new people in.
Lastly, at the end of our conversation with Isabel Kolick of the Heights Merchants Association, she stated that while the BIA does acknowledge the significant transit use within the area, she doesn't believe that adding a BRT and in turn taking away the current level of street parking would positively impact the area's local businesses.
I know how our shoppers get here because we've studied this for years. We have about 40% of our shoppers get here on foot, which is phenomenal. That's a really good number. It's a very walkable district. Those 40% are people who live close enough to Hastings and are able-bodied to walk, and they're not carrying anything that's too cumbersome. Another 50% drive. And they drive for different reasons, like I mentioned at the beginning of our chat. You know, they're carrying things, including children, or bringing seniors to the doctor, or maybe they are seniors who are going for their, you know, coffee with a friend or whatever. That's how they get around. Maybe they're people taking animals to a vet or what. There are lots of reasons why people take a car. And then another 5 to 10% take a bus. So maybe that 5 to 10% will turn into 15 or 20, maybe, which would be great, to get a little bit of extra bus riders, but how many car customers will we lose? And how much commerce does that represent for the merchants whose profit margins are really shrinking? We've got a really tough economy right now. People are just not spending money like they used to. And we have merchants who tell us all the time things like, oh, I've just remortgaged my house because I can't afford my staff, or they're not paying themselves because they just don't bring in enough revenue to pay themselves. So in this climate, you know, now we're gonna take your parking away from you too. Oh, but don't worry, you're gonna get some bus riders who will be coming. But those bus riders will not offset the numbers of the people that will just go somewhere else, like Kensington Square. So that's what we're worried about. It's not that we don't believe them, we do believe them that there will be some bus riders coming, but we don't think there will be enough bus riders to offset the loss of the wide diversity of people that come here through other means. And then the people that do walk here, how pleasant will it be to walk here when you've got six lanes of moving traffic, like being next to Highway 1?
For Movement YVR, the bus rapid transit expansion going through Burnaby Heights would provide greater accessibility and safety throughout the Burnaby Heights neighborhood. As has been made clear by the Merchants Heights Association, this is in stark contrast with the opinion of many of the area's local businesses. Regardless, Movement YVR is confident in its position, and at the end of our conversation with Michelle Scar, here's what she had to say.
I mean, if we look at Hastings right now, it already does act as a six-lane highway. And if we have dedicated bus lanes, that's actually a huge boost to safety. Transit priority lanes, there's a study from Melbourne that shows that they actually significantly decrease serious injury and death, which is really nice. And then there's another study from Montreal that shows that the presence of buses actually makes the road four times safer for all road users. So that includes pedestrians, cyclists, car drivers, and the occupants of the bus. Like, buses are actually a really, really safe mode of transportation, and we should have more of it to improve road safety. There's been a number of really horrific car crashes in the Heights. There was an old woman who was crossing the street heading to her dentist, and she was killed a couple years ago. There's been more than that. It happens quite often, and I actually think that bringing more transit to this neighborhood will help with road safety. That being said, I want to acknowledge, like, perceived safety, and yes, I think, like, for example, if, you know, depending on what plan goes forward, if it is cars zooming past you on the next to you on the sidewalk, that doesn't feel good. But in terms of, like, actual safety and not just, like, perceived safety, adding more transit and adding transit priority specifically, it will help.
With the public feedback that the City of Burnaby and TransLink have received regarding these two BRT options, a final decision will be made in early 2026 by Burnaby City Council. Once again, to hear some of the differing opinions on this BRT proposal, we spoke with both Isabel Kolick, the Executive Director of the Heights Merchants Association, as well as Michelle Scar, Director of Operations and Strategy at Movement YVR. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, you are tuned in to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all for listening to that piece. Once again, a decision on the bus rapid transit plan from North Vancouver to Metrotown will be decided early this year by Burnaby City Council. So stay tuned for that. We'll definitely be updating you all once that decision has been made. And coming up next, we have a piece that was made late last year from our friends at CHLY in Nanaimo, BC. This was produced by Lauren McKenzie, one of their LJI journalists, and it is about Vancouver Island marmots, specifically the Vancouver Island marmot population, which has broken a milestone after near extinction. Take a listen.
This is a CHLY News Update. A Vancouver Island conservation organization is celebrating hitting a new milestone as the marmot population hits new peaks. In 2003, only 22 Vancouver Island marmots were known to exist in the wild, and the marmot subspecies faced a potential extinction. But now, 20-plus years later, the Marmot Recovery Foundation has broken a 400-marmot milestone. Adam Taylor, executive director of the Marmot Recovery Foundation, told CJY this was a milestone he never thought they would break and celebrate.
Recovery planning for this species first began in the late 90s. 400, you know, that was kind of a number that was often kind of thrown about as kind of like a dream. Well, could we actually get back to 400? So it's nice to be there.
While there is still cause to celebrate, the Vancouver Island marmot is still a critically endangered species. Taylor says that at the end of the field season in summer 2025, they were able to identify 427 Vancouver Island marmots living in the wild, the highest number ever since the species has been counted. He says his work has been done because of the recovery efforts and breeding programs done by the foundation and partnerships with the Calgary Zoo and Toronto Zoo. Taylor says right now a key improvement in their population growth has been a stepping stone methodology for releasing the marmots into the wild. The marmots will be released to an already formed colony at Mount Washington, where there is already a very high success rate, as people at the resort scare away predators. Resort goers will also be seen as a threat to the marmots, teaching the animals about protecting themselves from predators.
This soft release allows us to really give the marmots an opportunity to learn some of those skills about how to survive in the wild. And then we retrap them the following year and translocate them to these far more remote sites where the risk of predation is quite real. And it makes a big difference to their ability to survive into adulthood.
As well, a supplemental food program for marmots coming out of their roughly 7-month hibernation period in the spring allows females in particular to have access to an abundance of high-quality food sources, with the hope it will encourage them to reproduce more frequently than they otherwise would. Taylor says when marmots are hibernating, they lose about 30% of their overall body mass, making them very weak when they emerge. Due to this, female marmots have a harder time gaining back strength to give birth, forcing them to give birth about every other year.
Last year, the marmots produced a record number of pups, 108 pups. We had never seen that many pups before in the wild, and we really anticipated a real step back this year because a lot of those females wouldn't be able to reproduce 2 years in a row. But in fact, we didn't see that at all, and this year we ended up with 117 pups. So